the 14th of March 2014. This is the third interview in the series of Oral History Program, talking to the descendants of the pioneer families of the Hall District. Today I'm speaking with, known widely as Wes, but formerly known as Wesley Kilby. Wesley's the son of Keith Kilby and the grandson of James and Beatrice Kilby. Now, Wes, what we're trying to establish here is the early lives of the early settlers and the pioneer families that settled in this district. Do you remember when the sort of Kilby family came to the Hall District, when they would have settled?
My grandfather arrived here in 1905. He didn't settle here first. He was married in 1896 or somewhere around that time. And he had a property at the Falls when he married Beatrice. And they lived there for quite some years until 1905, when they were burnt out with a big bushfire that jumped across the river. My grandfather was already sort of thinking about moving, because children then, my father was born in 1898, so yeah, he was getting to school age, so they were looking to get to school, and they were a long, long way away from school there. And so he decided that he moved into the village, and he bought this property, Anna Hill, which is just down from the Catholic Church, straight down the hill. He still had land at Parkwood in those days, and he still sort of ran the farm with the help of children, my father and his brother, and brothers included into that. And then after a while he started a butchering business in the village, and he would buy stock from all around the place, and he had a killing yard at the back there, and he would might ride on his horse out 10 miles and bring a beast back and kill it, or buy sheep from a farmer somewhere, all over the place. No trucks in those days, drove them all on foot. Pretty mean feat for one man on a horse and a couple of dogs to grab one beast from a man's farm and drive it 10 k's home. And so he did that for quite some time. He delivered meat around the village. No refrigeration much in those days, so it had to be delivered fresh. Or he would corn it or salt it like they did in the old days to keep it. And he had a Peasy butchering shop there that I remember as a kid, and that's where he did most of his stuff.
Did he ever talk about his father or parents? Robert, wasn't it?
Robert. I've learnt a lot about Robert, only because my wife's been doing the Kilby history. So Robert was a bit of a... Well, William, the first one, of course, that came to Australia, and then his son Robert. But Robert was a, I wouldn't say well-educated man, but he came out with his father when he was younger. He had some schooling. His father couldn't read or write, but he could, and when he started off here. But he was a bit of a jack-of-all-trades, like a lot of the Kilbys are, I suppose. We're not all intellectuals, but we're all fairly useful sort of people. And the more I read about Robert, I sort of tend to think I'm a bit like him in some ways. He was a bit of a jack-of-all-trades, like me, did a bit of building. My grandfather was a builder, did a lot of building too. So they all had to be pretty versatile, those boys. They came out here with nothing. They had to make their way. They had bought blocks of ground and had to establish homes. But they worked with neighbours all the time, and all the farming traits and things. They would help with chaff cutting or drawing in hay and all those sort of things. So they had a pretty busy life. So he was quite an interesting character, Robert. My grandfather, I knew fairly well. My grandmother, of course, and they were around in my early days. I didn't know Robert. I never met Robert or William, so I only go what I read about Robert, but he seems to be interesting. My grandfather, he was a bit of a blacksmith like Robert was. He had a bit of a blacksmithing trade. He used to do a lot of that sort of work, and he used to do quite a bit of building and stuff for his sons as they established themselves at Parkwood, built sheds and all sorts of things. But butchering and that, and he was in a local, in the community, he was quite involved with the early things in Hall, with the school, as you know, in getting the Hall School up and running. He was one of the instigators in that, because when they lived at Annahill, my father had to walk to Jindara to school, which is quite a few k's down the road, and they did that for quite some time until Hall opened, whatever year that was now, I can't remember.
1911.
Yeah, 11. My grandmother, very gracious lady, of course, she's a Southall, come from good stock, very kind, and we used to see a lot of her in my early days of schooling, because we walked past her to go to school every day, as Bessie would have probably told you, the ins and outs of that. We'd always have a yarn and something to eat on the way past, which was a ritual we carried on. So, yeah, we had a lot to do with my grandmother. I think the girls probably got on better with their grandmother than I probably did. I like grandfather. He used to talk about lots of old things. He did.
How would you describe your grandfather physically? What did he look like?
He's a fairly big man, fairly tall, yeah, fairly big in stature, yeah, quite strong, I'd say. Of course, he was a bit old for Tom White here, I suppose.
But,
yeah.
And your grandmother?
Shorter, fairly plump, plumpish, but short, yeah.
And what are your memories of visiting your grandparents at Annahill?
Well, as I said, we used to, when we walked to school, we would walk about a kilometre down this way and meet up with my cousins, Bessie and Runa, and then we would walk east towards up past Annahill to go to school, and she would always be there to say hello. And I can remember, and in the afternoon we always had a drink and something to eat on the way home. We wouldn't do it in the morning because we didn't have time. Usually we'd usually run a bit late. But I can remember Christmas was a big thing for us young kids, and every Christmas afternoon we'd all meet at Annahill, and all the cousins would all get together and we'd have a great time and we'd have tea there. Yeah, she was a very, very kind, loving lady.
How did they manage at Annahill? It would have been, you know, pre-electricity, everything, I suppose.
I suppose they were already used to that, weren't they? So they were brought up rough and tough. When my grandfather in 1895, 1896, when he built the house at the falls, he cut a lot of the timber from the place himself and built the place, so they're used to nothing, I guess, so the Annahill wouldn't have been much different to that. It would have been a bit more modern, I suppose, than the old falls house. Not that I never been in the falls house. There wasn't much of it left by the time I got there. I can only remember four posts, but I seen a few pictures of it.
And they brought up all their kids at Annahill?
Yeah, some of them were born at the falls.
Right.
Two or three, and the rest of them up here.
So, and who were they?
Well, it was Keith, Athol, Clyde, Bruce, Bob, Beryl, and Grace. You know, Grace was a Brown, of course. She married into a Brown. And Beryl married a Southall, of course. And the rest of the Kilbys, Bruce and Bob and Clyde ran Parkwood as a grazing partnership in the end, after taking it over from grandfather as he got older. And they had all that country down there, and that partnership lasted for many, many years until Clyde decided he wanted out and went to town, and then he sold his portion to Bob, and then they had it for a while, and then they sold it out to a developer bloke, and they moved away other places. And Clyde lived in town for a while till he passed on. Bruce, he sort of retired, and his son James Kilby is the only one living at Parkwood at the moment on a 30-acre block, which is only a bit left in the Kilby name of the old place down there.
What about your father's reminiscences of his father and his stories that you heard from him when he was growing up?
I don't remember lots of those, I don't think. I remember him talking about the butchering days and helping with those sorts of things, and grandfather was involved in lots of things that they were doing, and I can remember in the 50s he was still around and he would come out if we went out rabbiting and those sorts of things. I don't remember any great stories about him, actually.
What about your own father?
He's a very busy man, my father. He's always on the go. He had lots and lots of energy, I think, and he was small in stature. I think he loved the land, like we all do, and he worked very hard at it. I think he was a very kind person to lots of people, always willing to help anybody. And I think that that wasn't unusual, I suppose, in those days. A lot of people did that. But when I read through his diaries, I sort of get the feeling. I said to my wife one day after I was reading this long couple of years there, I said, I'm knocked up. I said, I've been doing so many things. And my father was all over the place.
Mm.
Somebody would ring up. So he was a very kind-natured man, my father.
Mm.
He wasn't a hard parent.
Did you talk about his days of growing up? I know he was one of the first pupils at... Well, he started at Ginninderra School and then later at Hall School.
He didn't talk much about Hall. I think he didn't go to school for all that long. He left fairly early when he was probably only in his 15 or something like that. But he had enough schooling to seem to get him by. He could write quite well, and he was good at arithmetic.
Mm.
He seemed to have enough talents to get him where he wanted to be. I guess farming in those days was not all about that. It was all about hard work more than anything else. Not quite the same today. Today it's not all about hard work. It's a bit of lot of nous, and you need to be a bit smarter to do this job, and it's done a bit differently. Those fellas just worked their way through these things. They just worked hard. And my father was one of those. He's a very hard worker.
There must have been some time off for relaxation.
Oh, he did. He did. He was always, and as I said, when he worked hard, but then if I read through his diaries, he'll say, oh, we went to a cricket match here, or we went to football. I don't think he played football much. My uncle did, and some of his other brothers did. I don't remember my father playing a lot of sport. I don't know that he was that sports-minded, but he might have played a bit of football in his early days, but they would go to lots of things. Yes, they'd go to things in town. He was very involved with the church thing, and he was very much mixed up with the workings of the church and church meetings and farming meetings and all those sorts of things. He would attend all those. They'd go to the pictures quite a lot.
This is the Hall pictures?
And others.
Yeah.
And others as well. We always went to the Hall pictures, but we would often go other places as well. My father loved shows, I think, was one of his great loves. He'd love to go to a show.
Mm.
And he would go to the Sydney show, or he'd go to Yass, he'd go to all the ones around here, Queanbeyan.
Mm.
He was very much mixed up with the Canberra show, Hall show, originally. He was a life member of the Canberra show in the end, like some of his brothers, and he worked very hard for the show, but he did love show.
Was he a successful sheep breeder? Did he win prizes?
Yes, we won a few Merino ewe competitions, the partnership did. There's a few trophies sitting in the lounge room there, big cups and things that we run over the time.
Mm.
We were quite successful at that. I think you would call them successful farmers.
Yeah.
In those days.
Did any tragedies affect his life?
He wasn't all that well as a child. He had eczema very badly in his early days, and he was quite ill with that. He always had a disfigured, his little finger from eczema days had grown around and stayed like that all his life.
Yeah.
Which was one of the things, but otherwise he was pretty fit in the end after his rough start.
Well, the falls would have been a bit of a tragedy, the burning down of the falls and the bushfire.
Yeah, well, my father was pretty young there, but he's only seven. He didn't sort of talk much about that at the time. He did say about it. Yeah, that was a bit of a tragedy. The house didn't get burnt down, but my grandfather lost a lot of sheds and things, I think, and a lot of grass and stuff. So that's when he decided it was time to go. But he'd already had this place on the go, I think, before that happened. So he was able to move in there fairly quick.
Mm.
Then the falls remain as part of the show. They just run it with Parkwood in.
He went into the military.
Yep. Yeah, they went to war. Not the war. They didn't actually see much active service, but they went to Gallipoli. And the light horse, and he had to wait. Dad was ready to go, but my uncle wasn't quite old enough. He had to wait a while because they wanted to go together, which they did. They weren't over there all that long, and he doesn't talk a lot about war things. He talks a bit about the desert and all sorts of things. The thing that worried him more, I think, and the thing that he only ever talked about was, and one of the hardest things he ever had to do was to shoot his horse when he left. Because they couldn't bring him home, and they weren't going to be any good. So after being with his horse for quite some time, they had to shoot them before they left, and you reckon that was upsetting. I suppose they all had to do it because only one came home in here, didn't it?
What was the inspiration for he and his brother to go off to war? Patriotism? Or?
I guess so. Love of country, that help, I suppose. That's what a lot of young people wanted to do, didn't they? I don't think they went over there just for the honour and glory of being a soldier. I think they went over there to try and help, to make a difference, like a lot of people did.
And when they came back, is that when they settled the partnership?
Yeah, well, they both sort of ended up getting these soldier settlement blocks there, which were sort of part of, in those days, a lot of the big properties had a lot of land that when these soldiers came back from war, they were sort of, some of this land was sort of taken off these fellas and handed to these blokes. Oh, not handed to them, but had to pay some money for it. And my father had this block where we lived now, which was 365 acres, I think. And my uncle got one next door, something similar, I think, in acreage at that time. So then they formed this partnership, then, because they were close to one another. And they worked very well together all their lives. My uncle wasn't all that well, and he died in his early 60s, so he had heart problems, Bessie's father. So he was quite sick for the latter years of their partnership, but it still carried on. And they had another young chap looking after the farm there for them. At that time they moved to town. So it was successful, very.
And what do you remember as a young fella growing up and doing stuff around the farm
I think I loved fiddling around the farm. I think I was born to be a farmer. I went to school, but I didn't like school. I never loved school.
Were you at Hall School?
I was at Hall School. Mm. I don't think I ever loved my school days that much.
Was that with Richard O'Sullivan?
It wasn't his fault, it was me, I think. I just wasn't that keen on school those days, but we went along. I went to Hall School, and then I went to Canberra High School till I got my intermediate certificate, and then I came home to work on the farm. And I'm still here.
You would have walked
to Hall School, to primary school. When we went to high school, I rode my bike to Hall and caught the bus.
What was Hall School like in those days, which would have been in, what, the late 40s, early 50s?
I suppose I would have been I didn't go to school till I was about 6, because there was no preschool or kindergarten, so I was about 39. I only had one teacher there, O'Sullivan. He was there all the time. Yeah, he was all right, old Sully, as we called him. I think he taught a lot of people very, very well. He'd been around a bit. He'd been at Wetangra and a few other places, so he was a good teacher, yeah.
Can you remember what the schoolroom looked like, where you sat and what you...
Yeah, sort of. I can remember the school like it is now, you know, the desks and all that set up there, and similar to that, same thing. Well, the same school, isn't he?
So Sally used to sit in front of the fireplace.
Yep, he'd sit there, with his swinging chair and sit around there. He didn't like any nonsense, old Sally. And we'd get the cuts pretty quickly if he didn't like us. Mm. He used to have this big old bush that grew out the window there that he'd just walk out and open the window and hack a bit off this thing, and he'd get himself a cane. And he'd use that quite, he'd whack you over the hands with it, he wouldn't itch anywhere else. But I don't think I was treated too badly by him.
The facilities at the old school were pretty basic,
Toilets outside, nothing much. We had a weather shed up the back, I know, where we used to eat sometime. But there wasn't much else there, no.
And you had to go to the weather shed to have your lunch?
Up the top.
Yeah, wander down to the very basic old toilets.
Yeah, somebody talking about toilets. I can't sort of remember the toilets, but they were outside, I guess. I remember where one was. I don't even know whether we had a... I seem to think we had a water tank there at that time.
Yeah, it should have been. Yeah, a water tank at the end of the building.
There wasn't water laid on, but I think you could get a drink there.
Yeah.
I always remember this map of Australia that was outside in the thing there, and he'd take us out there and make us stand on all these different cities where they were supposed to be. I don't even know how it got there, and I can't even find it now, but it was there one stage. And I can remember sort of playing around in the playground there. We'd have sports afternoons and those sort of things, and we'd have a sort of a bit of a sports carnival every now and again. He was a bit of a sportsman, O'Sullivan. He's quite a good tennis player, and he was keen on sports. So,
did you have a tennis court then?
No, I don't remember any tennis court there. No, we used to play cricket a bit somewhere down there under the trees, or anywhere. But running and those sort of things, we did a lot of that.
We read in the book about special days like Empire Day.
Yeah, we'd celebrate all those. Yeah, he was quite keen on those things. Empire Day, we'd have a bonfires, and I think he was quite a bird lover too. We used to have a bit of that story on birds and things, and I was quite keen on that for a while.
Did you have the radio then in those days?
No radio, not in my day. Well, I can't remember it anyhow.
Yeah.
There was no school there or nothing else came on there. I don't know what Bessie said about it. Bessie say there was?
No, we're just trying to work out. We know that ABC radio started school programs, we think, in the late 30s.
Did they?
Whether they sort of got to little schools until the mid-40s.
Well, I don't remember anything about a radio, not in my time.
Was there a piano there for music?
I don't even remember that.
And Mrs. O'Sullivan would come and do sewing classes?
She would do that one afternoon a week. Wednesday, I think, she was there. They'd teach the girls.
And what did the boys do?
What did the boys do for that? I don't know what we did there. Don't know that he ever taught us. We might go outside and do a bit of nature study or something, and we might look at a few other things. I don't remember doing any crafty things.
There is an honour board on the wall at Hall School. Must have given you a bit of a lift looking up and seeing your father's name and your uncle's name.
Yep, good. Yeah.
Were there other kids in the class that had relatives up on the board?
Might have been a Brown. Morley Brown was killed in that First World War. Some of his descendants would have been... Yeah, they'd have been close to my time, might have been a bit after me, but they would have been there. He would have been, he's about the only one that I can remember.
It was Clyde Hollingsworth who was
killed.
Yeah,
well, there was Hollingsworth in the village, but yeah, they would have been too, I guess.
And what mischief did you used to get up to?
Anything that boys get up to. I wasn't real bad, I don't think, as a kid.
You didn't get your name in the punishment book?
I don't think I'm in there. I haven't had a look, actually. Was in there?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm in there.
Yeah.
I don't think I did anything very bad.
But you knew all along that you wanted to be a farmer.
Oh, I liked them. My wife says I'm a fiddler. I fiddle with all sorts of things. I like tinkering with machinery, and I like sheep. I wasn't that mad keen on cattle, and I was not all that mad keen on horses, although we had to deal with horses in my early days. I'm more interested in machinery, cars, vehicles, tractors, and all the other things that go with it. I like tinkering with things, fixing things. I just love fixing things. Anything's broken, it's always a challenge to me to try and get it going again. I'm still doing it now. That's what keeps me amused.
So you didn't use the services of Jim Rochford's garage very much?
Oh, yes, yes. We would take our cars down there and get things fixed there. And we would do a lot of things through Jimmy. He was a machinery agent as well, so Massey Harris machinery stuff we would buy through him. Headers and ploughs and that sort of stuff. So, yes, we would get our vehicles fixed there, but if we couldn't fix them ourselves, usually.
And did you go to the village much for your shopping? Or?
I guess we did. In those days, I don't know how often we'd go down there. In the early days, it wasn't all that much. I guess I didn't attend the village as much as a lot of the other young fellows around because I wasn't in there. So to get to the village wasn't quite as easy for me. Saturday afternoons, I always went to the village in my early days, and we'd muck around with the other Colton kids and the Brown kids. We'd go mucking around up the Hall Creek or doing something, making explosives or doing something silly, but... I started making big firecrackers at one stage there because my father had some blasting powder that he used to use for splitting timber, and they used to bore a hole in these logs and they'd fill it up full of this powder, and jammed some clay and stuff around it and put a fuse in. And it was not a real big explosion, but it'd be enough to crack the log so you could split it and those sort of. So I started making bombs out of that for a while. And we had this kittyhawk that crashed over the creek during the wartime once, and there was a lot of bits of aluminium around the aluminium tube, so I used to go and get some of that and I'd fill it up full of this blasting powder and crimp it all over, and then we'd light it up and make this hell of a racket.
That's an interesting story. I hadn't heard that before about the kittyhawk crashing on the creek.
In the early, I do know the year too, but I can't remember at the moment, during the latter end of the war. Latter end of the war, we had a lot of kittyhawks were used in the wartime, but then we were getting rid of the kittyhawks, and we were trying to sell them, I understand, to the Dutch government. And we had at that time some lot of Dutch pilots in Canberra, and they had this area as a training ground, and they would fly over here and zoom and muck about all the time. And one day when we were down, I was down the paddock with my uncle Athol, and we were building a hay shed there, and these kittyhawks were flying around, and suddenly this one started this awful racket, and we all looked up and wondered what was going on. Anyhow, he whirled and banged into the ground just over the Redwood Creek, a bit to the west of that, on sort of Gorman Pond Road, heading down the creek. He crashed into the ground, but the pilot bailed out and he landed on the Wallaroo Road, or near the Wallaroo Road, just up from the creek a bit, and he was a Dutchman. But this kittyhawk it started a bit of a fire because it was the summertime. But us kids would go down there and collect all these bits and pieces all the time, because I'd never seen any aluminium in my day when I was a young kid, but there was lots of aluminium down there, so I would be making anything out of aluminium in those days. I used to manufacture rings for my cousins, aluminium rings, and carve their initials on them and muck about. That's when I found this aluminium tubing, and I thought, this would be great stuff. We can make some very good explosives out of this. So one Saturday afternoon, I had this bomb all made up, and we took it up the Hall Creek above the showground there, and we buried this thing in the sand and lit it up. It was quite good. But all those sorts of things we got up to as kids. But I was in the village. Yeah, I would be down there weekends, but not much during the week now.
And what was down there? Well, you know, if you walked up and down
the street. We mucked about.
Street
and latter years, when we got our licences, we all had a vehicle and we go mucking about, hill climbing somewhere. We had a property, Bill's property there, and it's a big hill over the back there, and we'd all see if we could get our vehicles to go up there. I don't know, lost an A40 ute. Bevis's father had a DeSoto, I think it was, DeSoto ute, and the Colton boys had a Fargo ute, or their father did, in all cases. But we'd get them all there and we'd try them out at the back of this hill there to see if it was any, see which one was best, see how far we'd go.
Mm.
Oh, we'd play tennis on Saturdays then, younger days too as well. But we just muck about.
Were they on the courts next to the pavilion?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was our Saturday afternoon jaunt, usually, for most of us. Even in our married days, we did that for a long time too. There wasn't a lot of other activities besides, we were still mixed up with church things, and we would have concerts at the church and that quite often. Band of Hope concerts, we'd be involved in that as well, and other church things. But in the village itself, there wasn't a sight besides Colin's Picture Theatre, which I used to help him with for quite some time as an assistant projectionist there. And that went on for quite a few years until I got married and I gave it away. But we would have, we always had a lot of kitchen teas in the village, because every young girl from the village that was getting married, they would put on a kitchen tea for her. Jeannie Southwell would be the main organiser of that. And that was a bit of a social occasion, because everybody from round about would come to that. And we'd have a dance in Rochford Hall there and supper. That was a big thing. We'd have a bonfire night when we had every year. No, we can't do that now, can we? Worse luck. Other than that, I don't remember a lot of other funny things that happened.
So you grew up, finished school, started work on the farm, worked here continuously.
Yep.
And then at what stage did you meet Elizabeth?
Oh, well, I met her when she came to live in the huts, of course, and she was around all the time. And because of the partnership job, the shearing shed was over there where they lived, and she was always helping, doing jobs around the farm there, collecting eggs. And so we sort of struck up a relationship there in the early days, and it grew from there, yeah.
Mm.
But then she went to town, and she moved to Rosewood and then went to town. And it continued until we finally got married, whatever year that was.
Yeah, as they say, lived happily ever after.
Yep, been good.
With, is it three children?
Four.
Four.
All boys. They're all around, far away anyhow. Rodney still works here in the shed all the time. Mark, he lives in Bunganoi. He's got a cabinet making show there, a carpentry show. Andrew, he runs the farm now, because I don't. I leased the farm to him, and he lives just up the hill. He doesn't work here full time. He's a fencing contractor most of the time, but he runs the farm in between weekends and so forth. And Peter works in Bunganoi at a furniture place, so they're all not far away.
So the continuity will continue. The Kilbys will still.
I hope they will. I hope they will. I hope somebody will still stay here. Somebody will end up with it, one of them, who knows what.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whole exercise here, this project that we're doing, you know, when you think, you started talking about William Kilby. I think he arrived in 1811. Then you have Robert.
Yep.
And then so on down the line, and your son Andrew is now still in the area.
Yeah, well, he's got two boys, and Rodney's got a couple of girls, and Peter's got a boy, and Mark's got a boy. So there's still a few Kilbys left to carry on the Kilby name anyhow. And I'm not sure who'll be carrying on the farming game. I think probably it might end. I guess farming is probably not quite as attractive game as it used to be nowadays, and Andrew's boys, I don't think they're not really interested in the land. Mark's, Harry could be, but I don't suppose he will be. Yeah, it might be a bit sad. The farming game might end.
And how has the community changed in the last, say, 50 years from when you were very active on the farm and associated with the village and...
Yeah, it was a very happy place, I guess. But I guess a lot of people in Hall were sort of farmers anyhow, a lot of them. So it was a bit of a farming community, even though people lived in the village. They had land close by, a lot of people. There was a lot of others there too, but I guess, you know, we all sort of knew each other in those days, which we don't now. Well, I don't, because probably my association with the village is not all that much nowadays. We don't tend to have to go down there. Usually we go down to get our paper and bread and all those things and groceries from the shop. That doesn't. Then we get to the shop, we'd meet somebody and, you know, we'd all yakker around. And now we don't have any kids at school. We don't meet school people. So we're a bit quieter now as far as the village goes. And the village, a lot of different people have come into the village and they've come and gone. And so the whole aspect has changed, I think. But early days, it was a very close-knit community, and everybody, like I said, was willing to help one another. There was nothing about religious worries or anything else. We just all got on very well. And if there was a community thing on or something on, like a kitchen tea or something, we'd all get there. Mm. Everybody would come. And I guess they do that to some degree, but there's a different difference in people, I suppose.
Yeah.
We're not all doing, a lot of us, I said, were farmers in those days, so and it's a bit different today.
You touched earlier on being the assistant projectionist at the theatre with Colin Southwell. Did you enjoy doing that?
Yeah. Mm. I like fiddling with that sort of thing. He's a good old fellow to get on with, Colin. I used to rewind films and muck about up there, and there was always two machines up there, so we had to change one to the other. Every end of every reel, there was always these little dots come up on the thing, and we'd have to be ready to flick it over so there wasn't a big gap in the middle. I think we must do that automatically now. I still see the dots on the films when I go to the picture. Yeah. I know they're there if you look, because I was used to looking at them, and we'd get one was a warning, and then there was another one, and then we'd have to go So he'd have to fire his machine up and turn it on and change it over and I'd knock mine off, whatever.
Well, they still run on the old dark lamps in those days?
They did. Yeah, Colin had this, I think we ran on DC current those days, the carbon, two carbon arcs close together, and during the show you had to keep them sort of fairly close. If they went too far away, they'd fizz out. They would go out and you have to bang them back together to light them again, so because then there'd be darkness for all. So we didn't like that to happen. We didn't happen very often, I don't think. So we'd have to keep winding, there's two knobs there to turn these two things together, keep the spark the right thing. Yeah, but in the early days he had a couple of old engines out the back to generate all. Well, first he had a big old engine up the back of the shed there that ran all this show. And it had a DC generator on it, and the lights and everything else ran on DC current then. Then latter years, he had, when the power came on the hall, he dished the old engine because they had two 40-volt AC-DC lights, but then he had to have a DC generator to run the arc still, so he had to have electric motor driving another generator then out the side of the hall that did its own thing. Don't know what happened to it. But he still had to have DC current for the arc, not for the machine.
It's interesting you mention about electricity coming to Hall in the 60s. I understand Jim Rochford, the then president of the Progress Association, used to lobby strongly for the village to get any sort of work done.
He did. He is very good, Jim. As I said earlier, he was sort of mixed up. He's very good mates with Jim Fraser, member for the ACT. And in those days, there wasn't a huge range of politicians to go through, but you would talk to Jim about something, and he would, if he thought it was a good idea, he would do it. And so they did lobby for the power for Hall. And it was a good thing too, because if it hadn't have been for Hall getting the power, we wouldn't have got it either. But we got it not long after that, because we thought once they get it to Hall, then they should extend it through these rural areas, which they did. So they came out through here, didn't go down Wallaroo for a while, went up Spring Range. But in this local area, then we got it as well. My father was just about to put in a lighting plant, and we'd had the house already wired up, ready to go, and they decided they were going to give us some power. Once they got the hall, they would extend, the ACT extended it a bit further for us, which was good. Now, Jim was very good. He did a lot more for the village than what people realised, I think. In those early days, they wouldn't have half these things. But there wasn't a lot of squawking about it. He just sort of got it done somehow.
Did you feel that they thought Hall was, or Canberra was, a poor cousin to Canberra on the end of the list?
Oh, well, it wasn't looked on that kindly, like Thawra and all these other places, all these little villages. They weren't sort of part of the big city scope at that time, but they were all country areas, and there was a lot of people lived in Hall, and they all worked in town. So yeah, but it was hard to get things done, and Jim was, he ended up getting the water as well in the end after all that. I don't know when it was, a few years later, I think. Government had changed a little bit by then, but yeah, so it was good.
Well, all right, Wes, thank you for your time. It's been very interesting, and we may talk again.
Okay.